Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Well, Brandon, we could start the show this week in a variety of different places. And to me, that speaks to just how, you know, good the show was this week and how many logs SmackDown has on the fire for WrestleMania. But, you know, we spent a lot of time on the Bloodline these last couple weeks, and we'll definitely talk about that angle that closed the show with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn getting attacked from behind by the Usos. So, but let's start with the Mysterio storyline, because this was this is a story that's been brewing for a very long time. I mean, if you take it back to when Rey and Dominic started tagging together, I mean, you're looking at years that that this thing has been kind of brewing and teasing of splits and dissension between those two for a very long time. They turned Dominic heel and continued to build this thing slowly but surely. And tonight was the boiling point. And I had been looking for, okay, Rey has been denying Dominic's request for this WrestleMania match and would not physically harm his son. And, you know, being that, okay, you know, they're building to a match here, what's going to be the thing that pushes him over the edge? And I thought tonight was a home run segment to get to the match. I mean, I thought Dominic was as aggressive as he's going to be on Fox to his mother and to his sister. And, you know, Rey finally having enough and walking up to him face to face, man to man, and clocking him to a just huge pop, big reaction from the crowd. I thought that was the right way to go about getting to this match. Also, what I liked about it was they lingered on the faces of Dominic and Rey for such a long time afterwards. And so to me, that was really important. Like, this wasn't, okay, father punches son, and then they're moving on to the next thing 30 seconds later. I mean, they made this feel like it was dramatic. They made it feel like it was a big deal. I thought this was exactly where this feud needed to go to get to WrestleMania. But what did you think? Am I totally off base, or are you on the same page?
No, I think you definitely nailed it. One of the biggest takeaways I had coming out of this show tonight was kind of what you alluded to there at the beginning, that SmackDown has sort of a plethora of riches in terms of angles and stories that they're developing for WrestleMania, and this Rey and Dominic feud, which also carries over to some extent to Raw, has become among some of the better ones, some of the better stories that they're telling, and it's effective long-term storytelling that started, you know, this particular angle started under the Vince McMahon era. I would argue that it certainly got better under Triple H and has continued to improve week in and week out. Dominic Mysterio is not someone I would have pegged to be one of the most consistently over acts in the company, but he completely understands the character. He completely gets what he is, what he's trying to do, how he needs to come off, how his facial expressions matter so much. And I think they, like you said, knocked it out of the park tonight. I think that coming out of Monday, when Dominic mentioned that his mother and Aaliyah would be in attendance in Vegas for SmackDown, I thought for sure that was how they were going to escalate this to a point where Rey said yes. I'd seen some discourse on Twitter and elsewhere saying that, you know, Rey had been so steadfast throughout this process that he would not wrestle his son, that it was going to be really, really hard to make an angle make sense as to why Rey would suddenly decide that it was worth it to face his son. And I thought about that for a bit, and, you know, I think it held some merit, but at the end of the day, I always thought that what all they needed to do to get to where they needed to go was to introduce the other members of the family. And the second that I heard that they were going to be in attendance on SmackDown, I thought that's how they were going to get there. I thought it was smart. I thought it was well executed. It makes perfect sense that Dominic could say virtually anything to his father on a weekly basis, and Ray would not cave. But the moment Dominic threatened his mother, threatened his sister, came after them, spoke badly of their name, Ray would change his mind. I thought it made a lot of sense, and I thought that the payoff with Ray, you know, finally giving Dominic the elbow to the chin, that pop was massive. That was comparable to the stuff you see in the Bloodline. And it has been a long time since we have seen multiple angles at multiple positions on the card be this hot. And it's really exciting to see a WWE product truly firing on all cylinders heading into WrestleMania and largely doing it with talent that's there every week.
Yeah, well said. And when they started this kind of the build to this Rey Mysterio-Dominic match, my thought was like, how are they going to get this all the way to WrestleMania? And one of the best things that they did was split them up. Ray's not going to fight Dominic, so let's get him on a different show. And at the time I was like, well, how long is that going to last? Because normally you don't the proof is not in the pudding there for WWE to usually maintain their integrity with that type of move. But they did. And yeah, they crossed paths here and there, and they had some the holiday angles and whatnot that kind of breathed life into the feud again and reminded the audience that it was going on. But yeah, now that they're here and we're a week out from WrestleMania, and now the match is going to happen. Do you Ray is going to get inducted into the Hall of Fame on the Friday night before WrestleMania, right after SmackDown. Are you of the mindset of, hey, let's take advantage of this if you're Triple H and you're like, we need more heat on this? Or is do you kind of put a pin in it to give Ray his due? Does it need more? Does it need more fuel? And can interrupting the Hall of Fame speech, like, what can that do for the match at this point? I ask that because tonight was such a strong reaction where if they did nothing, I think they'd be absolutely fine.
Yeah, I think they'd be okay. I do think that they're in a bit of a predicament in the sense that they need to choose a lane. So they need to determine whether the Hall of Fame sort of exists within the confines of WWE story, or it's strictly out of bounds and it's functioning sort of, outside of canon WWE. Now, I don't anticipate that, obviously, they're not going to be as unwise as to just sit Dominic with the family and have him happy go lucky and celebrating his father's induction into the Hall of Fame. I also feel bad that, being in the midst of this angle that he's unable to celebrate with his father and celebrate the accomplishments. But I think the payoff they get at WrestleMania proper is better in the long run. And I'm sure if you asked him, he'd take the opportunity that he's being given. But I don't know. Is it better to just keep Dominic away from the Hall of Fame entirely? Just he's not there. He doesn't show up, and you just move on none the wiser. Or is it better to have him further the angle in some way? I don't know. I don't know if I think I could take either way. I don't know if I want to see a full-blown angle executed, because I think that Rey Mysterio's career is impressive enough and this induction is deserving enough that he should get the standard induction speech and the time to speak. And yeah. I mean, we assume he's going to be the headliner. They certainly don't appear to have a bigger name than him at this point. So if he's the headliner, he's going to get the longest moment at the end of the night. I think you leave it alone. You let him have his speech. Maybe they cut to Dominic in the crowd and he's watching smugly. That's about as far as I think I would go.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And I think a lot of it, my opinion on that, going into tonight was like, well, they can always just pull the Hall of Fame ripcord if the story and feud needed that heat, because that would certainly add something. But based on like how everybody reacted tonight and how successful tonight was, I think, you know, there's enough heat in Dominic's not there, you know, and just treat it like that, do the Hall of Fame, and then move on. I think it's going to be one of the more memorable matches from WrestleMania this year. I hope it gets the time that it deserves, because it's been a heck of a story top to bottom.
And it really should, because I mean, right now it's looking like what? Do we have 13 matches or 14? I mean, it seems like we're going to be at about 7-7 each night, which is plenty of time. I mean, for them to give it time to breathe, especially with a few of the matches on the card that you assume will be shorter, like Omos and Brock Lesnar, for example, I don't think will be particularly long. The tag team showcases don't seem like they'll be overly long. So there's definitely going to be room for it to breathe if they want that. I also really wonder, because before it looked like we were definitely going to get this match at WrestleMania, my thought was that, you know, Rey Mysterio's got to be getting fairly close to a point where he would like to retire. And certainly the Hall of Fame induction is indicative that he's on the wind down of his career. I mean, is it possible that this is it for Mysterio? That, you know, he wants to go out with a match against his son on the biggest stage?
I absolutely think it's possible, for sure. I mean, you know, I don't know that you're going to get like a better story than this to like ride off into the sunset on, and maybe you put over your son, and you know, but it's absolutely a possibility. I mean, at the same time, Ray seems like one of those guys where it's like, I'm not going to believe a retirement until I actually see it at the same time.
And he's also still really good. I mean, we're not talking about a guy who's on the downswing. I mean, at whatever point he got the work done on his knees, I mean, it looks like it took 20 years off of him.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's pause right there. Let's set the table for the show and start taking some calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, covering the Friday, March 24th, 2023 edition of WWE SmackDown. I'm PW Torch, assistant editor Zach Haydorn, filling in for Wade tonight. Wade will be on the VIP side of things later on, as always. The Wade Keller Hotline, running down SmackDown. You can go VIP and check out the Wade Keller Hotline every single day. Wade does just a multitude of really great shows on that, and you can go VIP and check them out. pwtorch.com/govip. That gets you ad-free access to the website, access to just so many great archive newsletters dating back to the late 1980s, and a host of VIP exclusive podcasts that cover all sorts of different topics in pro wrestling, New Japan, Impact, and just tons of others. So go VIP, give it a shot. It's WrestleMania season. We have you covered WrestleMania week starting, I guess, on Monday. Now is the time to give VIP membership a shot. pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear with me tonight is Brandon LeClaire from pwtorch.com. He's resting up his hands for the big two-night WrestleMania event coming up next week. Brandon, are you doing like stretches to make sure those hands are ready to go to type those reports up, or how we getting to Saturday night?
Yeah, you know, extra knuckle cracks and
you know,
I kind of pull on each finger a little bit. I've got to use some working hands, because up here in the Northeast, you know, it's still winter time, so we got those cracks in between the knuckles. You got to get the lotion in there, otherwise everything gets dry, you know, from washing your hands so much. It's great, you know. Don't if you're in the South, people, just enjoy it.
I mean, it's quite the regimen that you have to go through to get ready for a two-night WrestleMania, covering that show live.
Yeah, definitely, definitely is. And I mean, honestly, I don't know if I consider two nights of WrestleMania more challenging or one night of AEW pay-per-view. And that isn't even like, that's not speaking negatively about AEW pay-per-view. I think the shows usually are excellent and I enjoy them very much, but they are a constant barrage with no breaks whatsoever.
Yes.
and the number of moves that you've got to try to keep track of, the pacing of the action is just very, very tough. Whereas WWE, you get a slower pace in the matches themselves, and then you get the Peacock commercial breaks, or, you know, if you have the premium version like I do, you still get promo packages. So,
you know, we have a YouTube channel now, so maybe I'll send just a camera to just watch you type.
You just got to have a camera on my hands.
Yes, LeClaire Cam is what we'll call it. That's the next, the next huge feature of PW Torch on YouTube. So I kid, but Brandon will be live on PWTorch.com both nights of WrestleMania a week from tomorrow with his alternate perspective reports. They're always a tremendous reads right up there with Wade's on the homepage throughout the show. So make that your second screen experience, and you'll be happy that you did. Let's get the phones going here. 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558 if you want to join us. If you want to send us an email, it's WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. And we'll start the caller portion of our show today with 615. I believe this is Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, always a pleasure, my friend. What's going on? What'd you think of SmackDown?
All right, well, first, Zach, I'm going to get the plug. Not really plugs, but my plugs. First, I will say, Brandon, I am enjoying the South very much so. The weather is beautiful. It's in the 70s. I don't know what to do with myself. I want to go outside all day long. But, no, Brandon, it's good to talk to you, man, as always, too. And, Zach, I know you were going to talk about it, but I'm going to bring it up because we've been talking about it on the YouTube channel. And you've been putting it on your social media many times about your new book that's come out on the artistry of Stone Cold Steve Austin, who was my favorite wrestler growing up, of course. I know you're giving a free copy away, and you should. That's cool you're doing that. But I am not going for free, man. I'm going to buy that sucker. I'm going to pay for it. You deserve it, man. I appreciate all you've done on the Torch for as long as you've been there. And, Brandon, it's funny because I remember, like, going back to the 5 years ago shows and when you hit did something on one of the shows, like you did a report on one of the shows or you called in. It's cool to see like us like talking to Wade back in the day and now like you being on the Torch and me talking on the Torch all day. It's just fun like going back and looking at that stuff. So it's good to talk to you guys, man. But I wanted to put that out there because, man, I'm excited to read your book. I'm a Stone Cold fan, obviously. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really going to enjoy that a lot, I think.
It means a lot, Sean. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for the kind words. Appreciate you.
Yeah, so as far as SmackDown, it was a good show. No, another really good show. I agree with what you guys are talking about with Dom and Ray. I love what they're doing. Now, last week, Wade had brought up a good point as far as even though I was really enjoying it no matter what, but it was kind of getting a little bit, you know, Dom was kind of saying the same stuff over and over. It's like, okay, what are they going to do a little bit different? But obviously with the family, it made it great tonight. Like, it was awesome. I love what they did. Ray finally socking them and, you know, now, Zach, I think Ray will lose, and he should, because if that's the way he's going to go out, I think you have to do that. Let Dom get the win. Let him build up his heat, you know, 10 times what it is now, which will be really fun because Dom's back in Texas. Dom is fantastic. He can wrestle better than you think, and he's really good. So I love what he's doing. But as far as I wanted to go off topic because we've already talked about that a little bit, I wanted to go back to Charlotte's promo. I wanted to hear what you guys think about that because I was really wanting to see where she was going to go. And I was with her, and then I'm with Wade on the freaking what chance. God bless it. Stop with the freaking what chance. Like, I know Charlotte's supposed to be able to talk away from that. And I thought she was trying to, but then when she went back, she lost me completely. She went back to they started wooing, and then she goes to the – I thought she got totally off course of what she was trying to say. Did that seem the same to you guys? I thought that was a weird promo as all entirety of it. It was just weird to me. What did you guys think about it?
I thought it was really weird, and I thought it was not good for Charlotte. You know, she's a babyface, and when you're babyface, you can't snap at the crowd. Like, I'll get to the what chant in a minute, but it doesn't matter what they're chanting. Like, she snapped at him like she would have as a heel, and I thought that's where it went off the rails because when she said, "Are you really wanting me right now?" Like it, it wasn't done in kind of a joking way. She didn't chuckle about it. I thought her tone was completely off. Even if she's right, which I think she is, you can't let that type of chant derail you that much, where it totally throws your character off. I think what came through there, Brandon, is like the natural Charlotte Flair wrestling personality, which is prickly, which is heelish. And when she's forced to react in real time and have like a genuine moment out there for whatever reason, in this case it was the what chance, I mean, that's the default. And so I thought she came across looking really bad after that. Audience started to boo her, and she just totally lost them and went back to like, you know, heel Charlotte mode. And so I thought it was an absolute disaster. Not good. A week out from WrestleMania. Brandon, where are you at on this?
Yeah, I'm not far off. I thought it was bad. I thought that it was a low point of the show. I thought it was the continuation of a number of examples we have as to why Charlotte Flair does not work as a babyface. I think that it speaks to her rigidity in that role. I think that she just, there's something about her that clams up. She gets stiff, and it works when she's a heel, because the natural sort of arrogance and natural charisma works for her. But when she's a babyface, she can't seem to shed it, and she can't become affable. And I just think it works against her pretty much constantly. And it's unfortunate too, because there have been interviews with Charlotte where her guard is down and she's just talking about women's wrestling and sort of, you know, her relationships with other wrestlers. And she can be a really affable, likable interview. And so for whatever reason, she's never really been able to translate that into a babyface promo or a babyface character. I think it's always a bad sign when someone who is supposed to be a high-level, high-ranking babyface on your show is getting the what chant. I mean, we can talk about how annoying the chant is in general and how much we wish it would go away, but it exists, and fortunately, it exists mostly in areas where it's being hurled at a heel who can insult the crowd to get themselves out of it. When it's being tossed at a baby face and they're put in a precarious position where they need to try to shut it down, for one, it often ends in the baby face no longer looking like a baby face, as we saw tonight with Flair. But number two, it just speaks to the crowd's general disinterest in what you're saying, which is completely counterproductive to being a baby face. You're not going to see Cody Rhodes get whatted. You're not going to see Sami Zayn or Kevin Owens get whatted. It's just not going to happen, because people believe in their babyface characters. People don't believe in Charlotte.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a problem at WrestleMania, because Rhea Ripley's a really cool heel.
You're exactly right. And the other thing, too, is that I'm sitting here trying to remember what the heck she even said in her promo. Not only did it derail it from a in the moment type thing, but the content like wasn't good enough to be out there, because it didn't help kind of deflect those chants either. And it speaks to, I think, where this feud is at, unfortunately. And you add tonight, and what happened to Charlotte tonight, you add that into the fact that Rhea Ripley on Monday night booked against another heel in Bayley and helped by the trio of Becky Lynch, Lita, and Trish Stratus to kind of get through that match. And this thing is all sorts of twisted and just not in a good place.
And they're not in a position to execute some kind of double turn either, because Dominic, who's so closely associated with Rhea Ripley, is still getting unanimously booed. I mean, nobody is cheering Dominic. So it's not like you can execute a double turn without splitting them up And I think if you split them up, Dominic immediately loses a bunch of steam because the majority of his character is based around his subserviency to Rhea Ripley. So they're just in a really, really tough spot with that. And I think it speaks also to the larger issue that they're going to have if they put that match in the main event on night one. I mean, I am all for the women main eventing WrestleMania. They've done it before. They will do it again. But I don't think that a women's title match is a prerequisite to be a main event of one of the nights of WrestleMania, especially this year. I mean, it is so clear and so obvious that the number two match on this card is the tag team title match. And now that we know for certain that Austin Theory and John Cena is going to open night one, the other potential fitting slot for KO and Sammy against the Usos is off the table. So putting that thing anywhere but the main event of night one, I don't want to be any other match in that spot. Because the thing is there any match that you can put in that spot that the fans aren't going to resent? Any match that makes sense anyway. I mean, you're not going to put, like, you're not going to do Edge and Balor in the main event.
No, you mean the main event of night one?
Right.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think you can, the only other match that you can force into that slot is this one. Because,
right.
You know, you have, it's the Royal Rumble winner, you know,
yeah.
In challenge for the title. So, I mean, you can certainly force that in. But Royal Rumble winners have not main evented WrestleMania before. And
just last year.
Yeah, right. With last year. Yeah, right. That's true. So, you know, it's not, it is, I mean, I think that's what you want when it makes sense. And you can certainly map it out that way. But if you, and the other thing here is too, it's not like, if you're in love with that idea and you're going to put, and you're going to make sure that Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair for the title is in the main event of WrestleMania night one, well, you better make sure that that match is ready for that spot.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They have not done anything to get this to a position where it can be in the main event. So they might shoehorn it in there, but if they do, I think they have a lot of problems on their hands. Go ahead.
There's no feel-good ending there either. I mean, if Flair wins, the crowd's not going to be into that at all. And, I mean, yes, they will appreciate the fact that Rhea Ripley is getting her moment, but she's still a heel.
Yeah, good point. Good, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're not sending the audience home happy, that's for sure. The what chance? I mean, I'm with everybody else on the what chance in terms of, like, they're silly at this point. All they do is kind of hurt the show and hurt the promo and hurt the angle. You know, they don't help. They're annoying. But I have to think that, I mean, you have to hear that rumbling there and you do have to change, Sean. I think you're the cadence of the promo. Like it's their job. It's the job to listen to that audience and react. And make sure that you are manipulating their reaction in a way that serves you. And so, yeah, it's very annoying when that happens. But I find it that I'm also equally as annoyed at the talent in the ring going like, Charlotte, like you're wondering why they're wanting you, but you're giving them every opportunity to do so with how you're talking. And so, you know, yes, it is on the fans, I think, to just be like, okay, we're not going to do this anymore. This is 20 years old at this point. But I do maintain that the talent are largely responsible because they're the ones that are out there pulling the reaction. So, I mean, Brandon, is this an indictment on fans or more a, hey, talent, get it together and stop talking in a way that allows for those?
I think it's both. I mean, I think there's blame to go around. I also think that fans have gotten in the habit of using it as a way to challenge characters that they don't necessarily care for or are not particularly interested in at the time. And what I mean by that is sometimes it's used almost as like go away heat, but more often than not, I find that it's used against a person who is apt to maybe deliver repetitive promos or deliver promos in a cadence, like you were mentioning, Zach, that allows for the what chant to sneak in. And I think a lot of times the crowd has been conditioned to do it as a test to see who's going to shut them down and how good the retort is going to be. Because we've seen a number of times that there are wrestlers who are fully prepared for the what chant and they know how to shut it down, and they do it in a really cool way that makes the crowd immediately stop. The crowd almost wants to pop at the insult to them.
Rhea
Ripley's done it. Stephanie McMahon has done it. Different wrestlers have done it.
Eddie Kingston is a legendary one.
Yep. Wrestlers have done it over the years to great success. And I think if you don't challenge them, if you just say, oh, you're going to what me, that's just going to make them do it more, because you're not giving it back to them.
Yeah. Oh, and if you go back and watch the segment, like, that's exactly what it did. They instantly got louder.
Yeah.
The what chance right after that. Sean, back to you. Great topics. Any comments on our comments, or possibly another topic altogether?
Well, I mean, going off what you said, because initially I was in the camp of Rhea and Charlotte, only because, and I know I wanted to see, you know, Rhea and Bianca too, but I just thought they had the story built in there, and I thought they could build on the story really, really well. And I just feel like they got away from that. And then, like I said, their characters are just in bad spots as far as Charlotte's character. Just, you know, I just think she's a heel. She's not a babyface. She's not a good babyface. She doesn't know how to come across that way other than, oh, I'm going to stand there and act cool, you know, and that's just not a way they should be acting. I look back and I'm with you, Zach. I think they should have gone Rhea, Bianca. I think that would have been a better story to tell. They could have done something there and Rhea could win. And, you know, I think it could have helped Bianca in some way, even though Bianca, I feel, was cold too in a lot of ways. But I feel like it could have helped her more, just a better heel going after her than where they are right now with Asuka. Even though Asuka's fine, but her character is just kind of bland too. I mean, she'll turn heel, I'm assuming, at WrestleMania, but we'll see where that goes. But my next topic I wanted to bring up real quick, and then I'll let you guys go here, was the Gunther Drew Sheamus contract signing, then going into the match against Butch. I mean the contract signing overall, I mean, it was fine. I just think when Gunther, you know, goes to Pierce and asks, why are you doing this, when I know we brought it up a little bit last week, well, you interfere in the match, Gunther. I mean, you knew this was going to happen when you interfered last week. If you just let them fight it out and one beats the other, then you wouldn't have to have a triple threat. And so it's kind of like you're asking that, but it's your own fault. It kind of made Gunther look a little bad there. I didn't really like that. And so, I mean, the triple threat match, of course, we all know is going to be a banger, a fantastic match. They're going to beat the living crap out of each other. It's going to be amazing. So what did you guys think of the segment, how Gunther kind of reacted there? And who do you think is going to win? Because I'm still torn. I mean, in my mind I'm thinking they're going to go Gunther just because he's so strong right now and they're doing a great job with him. And then you guys can talk about the match too real quick too. But I think Drew or Sheamus, they could go really any of three ways, and I think they could get away with it okay because there's stories to tell with all three of them. So what do you think they're going to do with that? And I'll leave it there, Zach. I appreciate you, man. Brandon, you guys are both awesome. I love what you guys do at the Torch. And go VIP, guys. If you don't, you're crazy. And I appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Thanks a bunch, Sean. Appreciate it. Great call, and have a good weekend. Sean mentioned the book. It is called Stunning, The Wrestling Artistry of Steve Austin. It is available for pre-order now. I'll talk about it a little bit more later. But if you want to pre-order a copy, head to my Twitter page, at ZHadornTorch. The link is right there. I'd certainly appreciate it. Brandon, what did you think of that, of the segment? I'll throw to you first on that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Sean. I didn't like the Gunther approaching Pierce and arguing the triple threat match. He had a case. I mean, he certainly had a case initially 2 weeks ago when Pierce made the he said he wanted a singular challenger, he wanted to face someone worthy, and he was upset that a contender wasn't determined in that five or six way match that they had, whatever it was. But he lost that battle by interfering in the number one contenders match last week. I mean, if he's familiar at all with WWE booking and being a character on the show, he should be. If you interfere in a number one contenders match as the champion, you're probably going to face both contenders. So there was no option left other than for Pierce to make the triple threat match. I think that you're never in a good spot as a heel if even the heel commentator is pointing out the terrible logical fallacy that you've just committed. And that's the position they put Gunther in tonight when Wade Barrett had to, you know, kind of expressly refute Gunther's claim that this situation wasn't fair, when he very clearly put himself in this situation and only had himself to blame for it. So, yeah, I don't think it came off well. It's one of the very few mistakes I think they've made with Gunther. And I think in the long run, it doesn't have to be a big deal if they don't dwell on it. But you'd like to avoid this kind of thing when you have a character that's been booked this strongly and this well for that long. Go ahead, and then we can go to the actual match.
Okay. Yeah. I'll jump in real quick.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm a little more lenient on it than you, mainly because of last week. Like, I thought last week, you know, I mean, yes, if you go in with the notion of like, hey, Gunther should know how this works, you're going to be in trouble trying to reason your way through this. But if you take it as like face value and it's like, hey, I'm this heel, I'm going to go bust up this match and then, like, you know, free as a bird, you know, you can reasonably believe that like the out of touch heel Gunther could get, you know, worked over that way, you know, and surprised by this match. The thing of it is, and so like I was okay with like them going down this road to get to the match tonight. I think they should have just had Adam Pearce just go, look, okay, I'll justify it right now. and almost, because, you know, he kind of asked, like, hey, tell me why this makes sense. Why does this match make sense? Why should I be forced in this situation? And yeah. I think that was the moment to, like, put the heel in his place and tell everybody, hey, you know, why this is happening. Like, and I think not only do you kind of wrap up that loose end that you're talking about, but there's some heat there with Gunther too at that point that you really didn't take advantage of. So I think you could have kept the avenue to this match the same. I think you needed Adam Pearce to just go, all right, fine. You want to know? This is why. You interrupted the match last week. What did you think was going to happen? It's the Intercontinental title. You know, it's WrestleMania. Like, you know, we have to have something to that effect. And I think that keeps heat on Gunther and provides you with the connectivity that you were looking for, and rightfully so. The match, I mean, I'm pumped for this match. Like, this is another one of those like SmackDown matches that I'm like, man, they're heavy with really good matches on the SmackDown side of things. And this is one of them. I thought they've done a really nice job of giving Drew and Sheamus like a rivalry together where they each want to beat each other too. And so it's not necessarily like a 2-on-1 type thing, you know, Sheamus and McIntyre against Gunther. Like, there's beef with Sheamus and McIntyre too. I'm glad that they've found a way to add that in, because I think it makes the match infinitely more compelling than the other way. You said you had some comments on the match too, though. Go ahead.
Yeah, I follow up to what you were saying about the alternate booking, and I think what you brought up would have definitely worked. I think it also serves the purpose of giving Adam Pearce some authority making him and his decisions appear legitimate, rather than having Wade Barrett raise the point. And then, you know, the people in the ring and even Michael Cole, for example, kind of look kind of look silly for not recognizing what everyone else is recognizing and what the heel commentator is recognizing. So, yeah, I think you get around that by having Pierce do it instead. I think the alternative way you could have gone about it is, given the way that they book Gunther and the way that he's been presented and the fact that despite being a heel, he has been very clear about wanting to wrestle. He wants to wrestle people for that Intercontinental Championship. He could have just attacked the two of them in that match and then said, hey, give me both of them. I will beat both of them. I've beaten Sheamus. I'll beat Drew, too. I mean, they could have gone that route, too. But regarding the match itself, I think that, like you said, it's a great rivalry that they have managed to put together for an undercard title. This is the most important the Intercontinental title has been in years. It's going to be the biggest match that features the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania in years, because Triple H has proven that he is genuinely interested in the two undercard titles and has done a really formidable job at building them back up. I agree that it's nice to have some interplay and some tension between Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. I wasn't high on how they got there. I thought that Sheamus just being a little upset about Drew wanting a title shot was a weak reason for them to suddenly be back in a bitter rivalry. Just because, like, these are two guys that are good friends and they fight all the time anyway, and it makes perfect sense that Drew McIntyre would want to challenge for the Intercontinental title. There was nothing that would indicate that Sheamus had any right to it. Drew was right when he pointed out that, I didn't know Gunther had already beaten you. Why can't I challenge for the Intercontinental title? So I didn't love how they got there to the discrepancy between the two. It seems like in the weeks since, they've kind of moved away from it a little bit to it going more toward, these are two friends who like to argue and fight, kind of like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Sometimes they're friends, sometimes they're bitter enemies. At the end of the day, if they're wrestling against each other, you'll get a great match. If they're wrestling with each other, you'll get a great match. So I think they've gone more in that direction, and I like that. But overall, yeah, I said a few weeks ago on a SmackDown post show that I did with Wade was, you know, not looking for a triple threat match, and I completely understand why. And I typically agree with him. I would prefer a one-on-one title match and title feud. But this was the one exception because, like I said on that show, in honor of Big E, I wanted to see a triple threat match for the Intercontinental title with big, meaty men slapping meat. And that is exactly what we were getting. I would like for Big E to be positioned in a skybox in SoFi Stadium, and to cut to him and just recreate that gif of him just shoveling popcorn in his mouth as he's like giddy, just stomping the floor with, you know, this match of giant men. I don't actually want that. I don't.
No, no. I mean, the cool thing about this match is that I think, you know, it's going to deliver. You know, like, there's just too much talent in there for it not to deliver on the level that you think it's going to, like, on the expectation that people will have. I think it will. I think they'll make good on that. And I think it's always good when you're going into a match like that.
Yeah. It's going to be safe brutality.
Yes.
Like you can guarantee it. It's not going to be like, you know, like some guy almost accidentally breaks his neck. Like, it's going to be like Sheamus's chest is just dripping blood and looks like hamburger meat.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly. And you know, the 80,000 people that are there are gonna love it.
Yeah.
Let's keep rolling with the calls here. 410. You are up. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
This is Reverend Keith from Baltimore. How are you, Zach?
Reverend Keith, great to talk to you. I'm doing great. Hopefully you're doing well as well. What did you think of the show?
I thought it was a very good show. I mean, I would have even settled for it to be the go-home show if it had been. But I know we have one more episode to go. I think they're taping that tonight after this concluded, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure Brandon would know.
I don't know, actually. Are they? It would make sense.
Yeah, I was.
I don't think they are because they're doing. They're gonna do SmackDown and then the Hall of Fame.
Oh, they're
next
doing.
Week
yeah.
Okay, well, maybe it's a Raw that they were talking about, but I know it was one of the shows they said that they might pre-tape. I may be wrong, but you're right. They have to do the SmackDown and then the award ceremony next week. But I agree with everything you guys have said, including Brother Sean. A shout out to him. I love him dearly. I agree that the Rey Dominic Mysterio segment was as tastefully done as possible. I was hoping that there wouldn't be any physicality. He basically, you know, shouted insults with Angie and Aaliyah and also yelled at her and told her to shut up, and that's when Rey clocked him. And, man, the place erupted. It was the second consecutive SmackDown in which the fans were treated to the pop of the year so far. So we've had two straight pops of the year. Last week was Sammy and KO hugging. And that was in Kansas City, Missouri. And tonight in Las Vegas, man, Sin City was lit, you know. So it was good to see it, you know, especially since Rey kept, you know, he was steadfast, as you said earlier. That's one of my favorite terms in the Bible. He was steadfast in denying Dominic the match. That was the one thing. When he was disrespectful to Angie, Rey had to step up. And like I said, they did it as tastefully as they could. Now, just looking down the road, gentlemen, this is my prediction. This is how I would book it as well. I would have them do two matches. I would have Rey win the first match, and then that would give Rey not only the Hall of Fame acceptance and induction, but also the win. And then at Backlash, I would have them have some type of stipulation match where Dominic gets his win back. But I would like to see Rey come on top on next Saturday night. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that could absolutely work. I mean, absolutely, you can. That can work, and you know, you can get mileage out of it for sure. I mean, it's usually, you know, the Backlash show has become almost like a, you know, the WrestleMania sequel in a lot of ways, and so it would make sense to do some kind of stipulation match that then Dominic wins and to get more out of it. And as I talk it through here, as much as it's almost like what's on deck for Rey. Like if it's going to be it, then I don't think you go that route. And I do think you put Dominic over, but if he's going to finish out this feud, you know, with Dominic, then, you know, they put a lot of time into this, Brandon. And so, you know, if you can get two matches out of it, then you probably want to. And the way to get there would certainly be Rey winning. And then, you know, Dominic having to, you know, get even lower to get a rematch.
Yeah, I'm not opposed. If Mysterio, if Rey doesn't view this as the end, if he doesn't think of this as a fitting way to ride off into the sunset, to have his Hall of Fame induction and to finish it out with his son at WrestleMania, then I think it makes a ton of sense logically that you would continue the feud. And usually I'm pretty adamant about making sure that you are not, you know, giving major wins to legacy talent at the expense of your younger stars. But I don't think that applies with Dominic Mysterio in particular, and especially against Rey, because I think part of the charm with Dominic, and this is such a rare trait for a heel, but part of the appeal with Dominic is that he's a loser. I mean, he's a loser who thinks he's really good and who basically skirts by because of the uber talented Rhea Ripley, who dominates him and dominates for him. I just think that, you know, the more Dominic loses important matches and simultaneously keeps up the arrogance and the completely misguided arrogance at that, the more over he gets. So I think that, you know, a win for Rey does nothing to hurt Dominic and in fact probably makes Dominic an even hotter heel when he comes out the next night and continues to tear down his father for seemingly no reason or because, you know, he perceives some injustice or tries to deny that Rey won.
Yeah, it's a great point. He is an interesting heel in that way, where it's like, yeah, he's a loser, and that's the point. And that's why it's like the stint in jail, like, that works for him.
Yeah,
Just talk about it, and yeah, well said. Reverend Keith, back to you. Reverend Keith, are you there with us?
Oh, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hello? I can hear you now. Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep,
yeah,
I gotcha.
Okay, I was going to say you guys have already discussed the Charlotte Flair promo, so I'll leave that alone because I was in total agreement with you there. The problem that WWE will run up against next Saturday night is the fact that, you know, like Brandon said moments ago, Rhea is so cool as a heel, and everyone can relate to her story. So it's going to be hard for the fans. It's going to be a 50-50 split, I think. You know, even though Charlotte is a quasi-babyface, we all know that she has heel tendencies, which we could clearly see tonight. They were in play, heavily in play. So with that said, I think the fans are going to be split because a lot of the fans love Rhea, you know, and they've loved her since NXT. They loved her when she lost to Charlotte 3 years ago in the empty arena WrestleMania. So it will be tough next Saturday night, whether it goes on last or semi-main. It's going to be tough. I think I know you guys said it may be hard to do a double turn because of the Dominic Mysterio involvement and the Judgment Day involvement, but I think the fans will force Rhea Ripley to become a babyface somewhere between now and probably the Puerto Rico show or the one at whatever the show is after Puerto Rico, in Saudi Arabia, because she's getting cheered more and more each week. The only reason why she's considered a heel is because she's in a heel faction and she's mommy to Dami. You know what I'm saying? So mommy to Dami. So we'll see where that goes. But I like Rhea Ripley, always have. She's really grown into her character. She's become the Eradicator. She's become the Dominator. She's an unstoppable force in the women's division. And like she said last Friday night on SmackDown in that promo in Kansas City, she said, "I want Charlotte to fear me like each and every other woman in that locker room." So where do you think they will go once Rhea becomes champion, Brandon? I'm going to pose this question to you. Where do you think they'll go with Rhea Ripley?
Man, it's interesting. We always end up, it's funny, whenever I'm on these shows, we end up talking about, you know, what's next to come for each of the women coming out of a big show. And I often struggle because, like, the rosters are thin and it's hard for them to really come up with major viable challengers. I don't know if they'll, possible they do a rematch with Charlotte Flair. I mean, unless Charlotte's taking some more time off, but she was gone for quite a while, so I could see her sticking around. I mean, if Rhea is going to move to SmackDown permanently and they're not going to continue with this sort of, you know, very loose and brand split, I mean, I assume that they'll tighten the leash a little bit after WrestleMania. We've got to look at women on SmackDown. So scrolling through the roster right now, man, it's thin.
Yeah, it's real thin.
It's really thin. Like I didn't even realize how thin until I was scrolling through here. Like, so that Raw doesn't even have a ton of options. I mean, you're looking at Aaliyah. Obviously, they're not going to do that. We've got Charlotte Flair.
No.
I mean, Emma is not in a position to be a challenger.
No.
Lacey Evans, certainly not in position. Liv Morgan, I mean,
yes.
I don't know.
Let me jump in here, too, because I think it is tough to, like, examine this. But
yeah,
it's
really hard.
I mean, one name that jumps out that you could do that I think would help Rhea, but not as a heel, only if she's a babyface, and that's Ronda Rousey.
Yes.
I think you could do that match. The other thing that I floated in my mind, Keith, as you asked that question, and Brandon, as you kind of broke down the options, is it kind of, I think you got to see some like sort of decision from Paul Levesque as to, okay, you know, you have one men's world title, but you have two women's world titles and a smaller roster. You know, one thing that you could do and you could build like to a pretty epic match is some sort of unification deal between Rhea and Bianca, and like have that be just a huge match for those two. You kind of like you play that card, and that's, you know, you got to ask yourself, okay, do you want to play it right now, or do you want to save that for like a bigger show? But to me, that's one of the only like really intriguing matches for both those women. Rhea does have Becky Lynch though too. That's also on the table, I think, at some point. So Brandon,
well,
I didn't mean to cut you off, but
no. Yeah. I definitely think to your point, Ronda was someone I was getting to. If they turn Rhea at any point in the next few months, I think Ronda is a must, because Rhea, first of all, it's a fresh matchup. It's not something they've done before. Ronda can definitely be, you know, annoying. She can get heat on the mic without having to try all that much. And I think that it presents an interesting style matchup too. You know, you're going to have Ronda looking to weaken Ripley with submission and Ripley trying to dominate her with size and power. I think it's an interesting match. I would like to see some more dedication in terms of, you know, output in the ring from Ronda, because I think she's regressed quite considerably. And I don't know that you want to, you know, throw that on a premium live event as a major title match until you're sure that they can have, you know, a competitive match. But I do also think that they have an option here. If Rhea stays heel, I think that they probably go with Raquel Rodriguez at some point.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they seem high on getting her in position for maybe a title match at some point. And I don't think that feels like a SummerSlam title match, but definitely a B-level pay-per-view title match, where they could do that match in Puerto Rico, or they could do that match in England for Money in the Bank and get away with it, even if it's not the greatest, because you've got bigger attractions. So I think that's probably a strong possibility if Rhea stays heel for now. Zach, I think the Becky Lynch match is definitely on the table, but if they are going to go back to any sort of concrete brand split, then Rhea's going to be moving to SmackDown.
Right. Yep, good point. Zach, or Reverend Keith, back to you.
And they could always use Shayna Baszler as the setup. Or the point man or point girl,
yes,
for
yep,
the feud with Ronda. You know, that would be good. That you brought up a good point, because the only baby face that I could see Rhea feuding with once she's finished with Charlotte would be Liv, because they've been teasing that all along. Plus, they have the history from being former tag team partners. But if you turn her baby, there are more options, and you're right. It's sad to look at these rosters, man, because the undercard of the women's rosters on both SmackDown especially and Raw is so weak, it's pathetic. You know, WWE has really failed the women. You know, at least they're starting to build up the women in NXT, but all the women on the main roster, man, it's sad. I hope they get better, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they got some work to do. I mean, they absolutely have some work to do, and you know, they need to shake things up for sure on both brands, even with the talent that's up there right now. And my guess is we will see some of that. You know, I mean, I'm sure it doesn't fall on deaf ears with Triple H either, but they got to get there.
It really doesn't help having so many talent relegated to the tag team division either. I mean, I know they wanted to create those women tag team titles for a reason, and it was to give women more TV time. But I would argue that your time is better spent giving women additional TV time in singles feuds to prepare different women to be catapulted into title picture, rather than having random teams fight in fodder matches to compete for tag titles that have never meant anything. I mean, they just they really haven't ever established them to any significant point. It's not at all unlike what happened in AEW with the tag team titles and then the trios titles. As soon as the trios titles were introduced, the tag team titles were instantly downgraded in terms of importance,
mm-hmm.
and you had tons of talent from that division sucked out of the division and thrown into the trios
mm-hmm.
division. WWE has that same issue with their women. They don't have enough women on the main roster to support multiple divisions, so it just seems like their time would be better spent building secondary singles feuds rather than trying to build tag feuds.
Well
said, Brandon. Yes. My third and final point, Zach, I wanted to say that Cody's matches are starting to get better and better. He really tells a story in the ring. And I thought he and Ludwig really complimented each other tonight, just like his recent matches with L.A. Knight and the other person that I seen him wrestle a couple weeks ago. But now, here's what's interesting. They're setting up this potential feud for, I guess, post-WrestleMania with Solo. Now, this could go either way. They could be teasing the fact that maybe Solo hinders Cody from getting the belt, and maybe they get into a feud down the road. But it looks like we're headed for another feud for Cody after he finishes up with Roman, which I know won't be a one-and-done either way. But I could see, you know, of course, the Usos and Solo will probably interfere in that match next Sunday night. But just wanted to say, I think Cody's looking better and better in the ring. And he's going to be in for a fight against Roman, because I think that's really going to be a match, and it's hard to predict. I would love to see Roman keep the belt and let Cody chase, but that's yet to be seen. But, gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. Zach, congratulations on your upcoming book that's just been released, and much success there. Brandon, as always, you provide excellent commentary and analysis. God bless you. Have a good week.
Thank you so much, Reverend
Keith.
Appreciate it. Very much appreciate it. You have a good weekend, too. Thank you for the call. Yeah, the Cody match, I agree. I thought that was a good match tonight, a good way to start the show. I think having those matches helps Cody, you know, just from a meta perspective, from like just a real world, real life perspective, like him being able to go out there, have good matches. I think people want to see that. I mean, he's going to wrestle in the main event of WrestleMania. He hasn't had that many matches in WWE since he's come back because of his injury. So I do think it's important for him to have just good matches like that. It's risky because, you know, WrestleMania is a week away and he was going pretty hard in there. I also think you could make the argument like, okay, like shouldn't Cody kind of like dust Ludwig quicker than this? And I think that's a valid argument. But I think the benefit outweighs the negative there, in that Cody just gets to go out there and do his thing and get people like on his side, on his bandwagon. Anybody that might not be, those matches, I think, Brandon, help pull fans with him.
Yeah, it's a fine line, because I think that it is important to showcase Cody as an in-ring talent and feature him in prominent segments where he can have a good, solid wrestling match where he goes over clean and it builds his stock and gets him ready for this main event at WrestleMania. But on the flip side of the coin, I think it is very, very much worth mentioning that I do take some issue with someone who is about to main event WrestleMania having that competitive of a match with a tag team wrestler. And that isn't anything, you know, against Ludwig Kaiser, but rather I think you have to be careful about the way you're presenting your challenger and you know, potential winner of person to end this historic world title run. And I bring that up only because I do think that there are situations where you can make it work. And I think tonight is probably on that line of being one of those situations. But I look to when AEW does this, for example, and they do it frequently. They did it frequently with Cody Rhodes when he was in the company. Cody would wrestle long, arduous matches with talent that was not considered to be at his level. And it was one of the early indictments of AEW that they were almost skittish about putting their stars over. And I see them do it now with people like Jon Moxley. When Jon Moxley goes 14, 15 minutes with members of the Dark Order, I don't think that does anyone any favors. But I think their context is key. And I think that with Jon Moxley, he's established, he's over, he's probably the most important full-time act they have on the roster. There's a need to keep him strong. He's had a couple of major losses lately. Having him go toe-to-toe with someone from Dark Order is probably not the wisest decision. He should probably go over Dark Order members in more decisive and quicker fashion. With Cody Rhodes tonight, I think that you can make all the same case. You can say, you know, Kaiser's not on his level. Cody is about to challenge for the world title at WrestleMania. He needs to beat Kaiser more decisively and more quickly. And if that is the opinion you hold, I think it's perfectly valid. The only reason I think I'm willing to give it a little bit more of a pass is just because Cody needs definitive TV time on major shows where he's exposed to the audience for extended periods of time, and you can get used to this, seeing this person presented as a main event act, presented as an anchor at the beginning of your TV show. He gets the first 20 minutes on Fox on Friday night, and he comes out at the end of the segment looking primed and ready for WrestleMania and setting up an angle for next week on Raw. So I think there is a small out there, but yes, I don't want them to get in the habit of doing this with Cody.
It's a good call, and it does bring up like kind of like a, you know, almost like a fundamental thing in terms of watching wrestling. It's like, you know, because the top guys, these, you know, now they have to be able to have really good matches, and there's so much time to fill on television where it's like, well, all right, if you're gonna put a guy out there, and it needs to be 22 minutes or whatever, because it was a long match, you know, you probably want it to be one of your bigger stars that can carry that. But you're absolutely right to call out that it has diminishing returns, because this guy is supposed to be wrestling Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, and it's taking him 20 minutes to beat, you know, Ludwig Kaiser. So I think it's a smart call out. I like the promo after the match. Yeah. I thought that was like one of his, you know, it wasn't as nuanced as his other promos with Roman Reigns opposite Paul Heyman, and it didn't have like the kind of the, I don't know, the quote, the Cody drama that accompanies a lot of his promos. This was just like straight up to the point. Solo, you're not ready, I'm gonna beat you. And Roman Reigns, he doesn't know what's coming for him at WrestleMania either, I'm gonna beat him. I thought it was really like short, sweet, to the point, definitive, but very efficient.
Yeah, the thing that I really like about this inclusion of Solo Sikoa these last couple of shows is the fact that they're bringing Cody into the multi-layered storytelling that is the Bloodline. And what I mean by that is that Cody isn't just telling Solo that he's not ready because he believes that to be true, and because he wants to beat Solo. He's telling Solo that he's not ready because he knows that Solo is a hothead, gonna piss Solo off. It's going to make Solo more susceptible to outbursts. And if Solo is more susceptible to outbursts, is angry at Cody Rhodes, and can't keep his frustration in, then he becomes a headache for Roman Reigns. So it's all about the multi-layered, the migraine, the storytelling of the multi-layered headache that Cody is creating for Roman Reigns, and doing it not just by getting in his head, but by getting in Solo Sikoa's head and making Solo a problem that Roman did not foresee having to deal with. And it speaks to this whole idea that Roman Reigns is vulnerable because the bloodline is crashing down around him. And if you notice, Cody plays in the same way that he's doing the head games with Solo Sikoa. He's also helping to fuel Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn as they do the same thing to the Usos. Because Zayn is now saying that Jey Uso is just waiting for his chance to turn on Roman. That Jey Uso is only upset with KO and Sami because they get to beat Roman Reigns up and he doesn't. So now they're in the Usos' head. And Jey is conflicted because he knows that Sami and Kevin are right. And Jimmy is conflicted because he's wondering, is his brother really wishing he could beat the crap out of Roman Reigns? So at every level, the bloodline is conflicted, they're in disarray, and they're vulnerable for the first time. So I really like how they're weaving different avenues to this angle in to both matches, and I think that's why it's so important that both matches close their respective nights of the show, because they are so much intertwined in each other. They are dependent on one another. Who wins the tag team title match directly impacts the Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns match. Because if the Usos can best Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and take them out of the equation, then Roman Reigns goes into the match on Sunday confident, feeling like the bloodline is back and he is no longer vulnerable and he can beat Cody Rhodes. But if KO and Sami win, suddenly all the questions now are poignant again about, has Roman Reigns lost control of the ship? Can he put this distraction aside to beat Cody Rhodes? They're so intertwined in one another, and I think when you have stories that are that critical and you know, dependent on one another, man, you just got to go with them as your two main events.
Yeah, agree, for sure. Okay, let's 443, we'll get to you in a second. We're going to bring on an outside correspondent from the show tonight. I believe this is, hopefully I get this name pronunciation right. Is it Plotkin? Plotkin, is that you?
Yes, indeed, sir. You got it right. It's Plotkin.
Oh, good. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. I know you got a pretty great dark main event, which I want to definitely get to in a minute. But first and foremost, talk just about your overall experience going to the show. You're a week out from WrestleMania. Did it feel like that? Was there a buzz in the audience in terms of, you know, WrestleMania momentum?
There really was. The crowd was hot tonight. The only time that it wasn't was during the women's tag match. But every other moment, like, I'd give the show 8.5 out of 10. The crowd loved it. Rey Mysterio, far and away, the biggest pop of the night. The crowd exploded when he finally hit Dom. I certainly was not expecting us to get that on this show. I thought they would have saved that until the night before the Hall of Fame. But it was great.
So talk about that. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, what was the reaction to Rey Mysterio when he came out? I mean, obviously, we'll get to the big pop in a minute when the angle with Dom went down. But what about Rey just on his own having a match with LA Knight? What was the reaction there?
The reaction to Rey was great. I noticed there was a large section of the crowd that was Latino. Rey was as over as anything. I personally am a huge LA Knight fan, so I love that he got some great offense in, and some moments, but anytime Rey did anything, the crowd, almost in the same way that Roman Reigns does when he has a mic in his hand, Rey almost had the crowd eating out of the palm of his hand anytime he had an offensive move in the match. He was huge.
When Rage confronted Dominic, though. Oh, go ahead.
When Dominic came out, the heat was nuclear. It was the most heat I've heard in a while. There was a, I don't know if it came across on TV, there was a bit of a "Where's Your Mommy" chant that broke out.
Oh, wow.
When he was at ringside. And then when he went over to his mother and his sister, the crowd, with every line that Dom had, the crowd just was kind of like gasping more and more. Like, oh my God, he went there. And the payoff was huge. It was almost like when Ray won the Rumble. It was so loud in the house. And it was
Keep going. This is great.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, one of the things, I know that a lot of times the TV taping or the TV shows can be slow and can see it with the commercial breaks and the backstage segments. But after, I thought it was hilarious, after Ray's entrance and it went to commercial, the PA started to play the DX theme song and everybody was just singing along to that for 2 minutes, including the announcer, Samantha Johnson. She was laughing. It was what I thought was a very clever way to keep the crowd energy up, more so than I've seen at other times when I've been to other TV shows. I thought it was brilliant. So the crowd stayed hot throughout the entire match.
Leaning into that nostalgia.
I guess there's a reason why the Legends have Legends concert. I guess. People love, you know, anything from the past 25, 30 years, it still hits.
You mentioned, real quick, you mentioned, I don't want to forget to ask you this. You mentioned that, like, that you didn't think you'd get the payoff on, like, the Ray payoff on this show. Do you think that was a common sentiment? Was part of the pop, you know, the surprise of, whoa, like, it happened? Or were you kind of like on your own in terms of thinking that you wouldn't see the angle play out that way?
Yeah, judging by the reaction, I don't think anyone was expecting it to happen that night. I don't think anyone was expecting Ray to hit Dom. I certainly assumed they would have saved it for the night before the Hall of Fame and the last SmackDown before Mania. When Ray finally hit Dom and accepted the match, it was huge.
Yeah. How about the Charlotte promo? That we talked about it earlier in the show. That was really bizarre. You guys were giving her what chance, and she certainly didn't appreciate it, and kind of snapped at you guys. I mean, talk about like how the promo went up until that point and what that moment did for it afterwards from a crowd perspective.
The promo I thought was going quite well. I cannot stand the what chat. It is the bane of my existence. It's like yelling out. It's like going to a play and yelling out at the actors while they're saying their lines. It cuts the rhythm of the promo. It kills the momentum. It hurts the emotion that's trying to be conveyed. Charlotte, I think, was completely justified when she kind of went off on the crowd a little bit. To me, the crowd ruined that promo.
Did she get the audience back? Or did she kind of just lose him at that point? Because she did kind of snap, or at least that's what it came across as on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it did come across as real, as earnest frustration. She got a big pop at the end. At the end of it, it got a big pop. So in that sense, she was able to get them back. But I just really think the crowd just loves to say what, because they want to make, because the crowd loves making themselves a part of the show, even at times when it would be better for their own enjoyment to sit back and shut up.
Yeah, yeah. Brandon, let me throw to you for some questions. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussion about the merit of having Cody go, you know, multiple segments with Ludwig Kaiser at the beginning of the show, and I'm just curious, you know, having Cody out there for like the first quarter of the show, really, what did you feel like the temperature was with the crowd with him? Did he feel like a legitimate over WrestleMania main event babyface act? Like, how did that whole segment go over?
He did, to answer your question. He stayed over. Cody, as one of the people that I came to the show with, said, like, he's the new Hulk Hogan. He's following, he's reading straight from the Hogan Cena playbook, and the fans love him. They play, at the end of the night, even Cody's song, when the arena was clearing out, Cody's song played on a loop probably 7 times before they cut it. The crowd never once got tired of Cody. There were Cody chants multiple times during the match. When he came out, a huge pop, obviously, when he came out to make the save at the end. Cody Rhodes is – I was very scared when Cody came back, whether it's to begin with, last year, what kind of reaction he would get, because it would have been a giant, giant waste of money if the crowd started booing him. But Cody's over. Cody's the guy, to put it in a cliched way. Cody is the guy.
So tell me a little bit about what happened after they went off the air, because you mentioned Cody coming back out. We didn't see that at home. The show closed out with the Usos, you know, leaving up the ramp, and that was that.
Okay. So, yeah, after the Usos, it went off the air, or after the show went off the air, Cody came out, and it was interesting to me because at that point the faces had the numbers game, because you had Jimmy and Jay in Solo, but then you had the Street Profits and KO and Sammy and Cody, even though KO and Sammy stayed out of it for the most part. Yeah, so the Street Profits came out to make the save first. And then Cody came out, I guess, after we went off the air. And then Cody was in the ring with the Street Profits. KO and Sammy kind of, you know, snuck away. And Cody challenged the Bloodline to a 6-man tag. He called out to Solo. He said, "We don't have to wait till Monday unless you're not ready," which immediately the crowd broke out with a "you're not ready" chant. And at the beginning of the match, Cody was like, I want Solo. Solo tagged in, and it was just a heat spot. He immediately just tagged right out, and they never touched. One thing. Montez Ford in that dark match, he's a showman. He chopped an Uso in the corner. He did the flare chop. And as the Uso, as Jimmy was falling forward out of the corner, Montez was right next to him mimicking it, just like Damian Sandow used to do when he was the Miz's stunt double. And they did that. He did that spot twice, where you're watching Jey Uso fall to the floor with pain, and Montez Ford is step for step doing the exact same thing right next to him. It was highly entertaining. It was highly entertaining. Cody, one thing that was very interesting, at the end of the night when Cody had the mic and was, you know, thank you Las Vegas and all that, to the fans, and he turned to the Street Profits and he said, "Thank you for letting me join this locker room," which I thought was very very interesting. I think it shows how much Cody really does respect kind of where he's at now, and what he's doing, but also acknowledging the position that he came back in at. You know, that he came back into the company on third base. And I think he very much recognizes that. And showing that kind of respect to the Street Profits, that was something very cool. And I was...
Cody certainly knows all the right things to say, and I think that, I mean, that's great. If he is genuine in the things that he says, and I think he is, like, that stuff gets over. I mean, people will see through it if it's phony, but I just don't, I haven't seen any indication that it is. Like, it just seems genuine.
Yeah, it's all genuine. I know there are jokes about, like, you know, Cody crying during promos and everything, but it's like, that's the emotion. That's what's real. And I remember, I can't recall whether it was on Monday Night Raw or whether it was tonight, but I remember he referred to the crowd. He said, all the little nightmares out in the crowd. He's already got the children hooked. The children sitting behind us were in love with Cody. Every time, myself included, I'm in love with Cody's theme song. I could listen to it forever. So anytime, you know, when that big whoa happened, the crowd, it was deafening in the arena. And also, he's an incredibly smart businessman for buying the publishing rights to that song to keep that forward.
Yes, Cody's... Yeah, smart in that regard. So did he get the biggest pop of the night?
Ray did. Ray got the biggest pop of the night, far and away. Cody was number two, for sure. Sammy was number two. And I personally can't wait to buy a WrestleZania shirt. but Cody... For the amount of time that he was out there, for the number of times, I think I made a count. Over the course of the night, we heard Cody's music 5 times, and the pop never dropped. It sustained each time that he came out. The man is, he's it. As his father would say, you know, he's got it, baby.
Yep. Talk about, so you mentioned Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens. We saw on television pretty like a very A to B, you know, segment. They came out, they kind of talked back and forth, they did the shirt thing, attacked by the Usos for a bit, and then that was it. Did it feel live in the building that the Zayn momentum is still there, or I know you said he got a strong pop, but like, is that kind of the specialness? I know that's not really a word, but the special nature of the Sami Zayn run this year in 2022. Could you sense that still, even though the segment was pretty straightforward?
No, you hit it right on the head. That segment felt very just straightforward. Sammy did get the huge pop. I think that at this point, it's now a respect, from everything that he's done over the past year. I don't think Sammy's ever going to be as big again as he was at the Elimination Chamber. I think that was his zenith. And he'll still get huge pops, but I don't think it's because people want him to be the champion or they don't want him to be Roman Reigns.
Okay.
I think... It's they'll get a big pop if they win the titles at Mania, but almost like how they gave Denzel Washington the Oscar for Training Day, and it was just kind of widely acknowledged that he was getting an Oscar because they hadn't given him one yet. I feel like Sami Zayn's pop is in the same vein in that he did all this over the past year. He had his chance and he failed, but we still love him and he's awesome. So we're still going to give him the big pop.
Yeah. Okay. How about the crowd itself? I mean, talk about the makeup a little bit. Was it sold out? And if not, like, how full was it? And B, you know, just give us a sense of, was it a lot of families, not a lot of families? Just talk about just, like, the crowd makeup.
It was mostly families. I did make a note to find somebody at the venue to ask. I know that they said that 11,000 people were in attendance. And I know that MGM is a 15,000 cap venue. So, and it looked by the middle, by I guess it would have been 8:30 East Coast time, the venue looked pretty filled in. So I would guess that they blocked off. I would guess that 4,000 between was what they blocked off for production. The show looked pretty ding darn close to sold out.
Yeah, to expand on that, looking from WrestleTix earlier in the evening, they had a setup count of 10,270, which pretty darn close to that 11,000 mark that you mentioned someone in the arena saying. And it looked like around, I don't know, like 4 in the afternoon East Coast time, there were about 300 tickets available in total, all either, you know, opposite the stage in the upper level or hard cam side in the upper level or what I would consider rear view behind the stage. So for all intents and purposes, visibility-wise on television, it looked like it was a pretty legitimate sellout.
Yeah, by the time, the crowd filled in at the beginning. I mean, even by 8 o'clock or by the start time, venue looked about 83% full. And then by, you know, probably the 8:30 mark, it had filled in. I couldn't see any gaps. And, yeah, it was mostly families. I happened to bring, ironically, like when I was a correspondent a couple of years ago, I happened to bring my girlfriend I'm trying to get into wrestling. And this is her first show at her first. We had been fortunate enough. We'd seen AEW at T-Mobile, but we lucked our way into one of the suites up there. And then I'd taken her to a TNA show where we were second row at a NXT size venue. This was her first arena style show. And her first WWE show. Actually, if I may, I'm going to throw it to her. I'm curious to hear what she had to think about it, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, definitely.
So my girlfriend Stephanie has the other earbud.
Okay. Hi,
hey, Stephanie. How's it going?
Hi, good. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. It's always fun to talk to somebody who's experienced a show for, like, the first time. I mean, I don't even want to lead the question. Just what's your kind of feeling about what you saw?
Well, you know, Andrew does a lot to try to get me interested in wrestling. So leading up to this, it showed me quite a few promos. And most of the ones I saw were with Cody Rhodes. So for me tonight, I was most excited when I saw him come out because I had seen him the most. And for me, that when he came out, that was when I felt like I saw the audience the most. And, you know, it was really exciting. And, you know, I really like it when things seem to happen that are unexpected. I thought it was really funny when the kid, I forgot his name, but I know he's Mysterio's son, when he came out yelling at his mom saying, like, how does it feel to be married to such a pathetic loser? That was kind of hilarious. But it was also exciting at the end of the night when Cody Rhodes came out again, and that seemed unexpected. I was surprised that he came out so early in the show because I thought they were going to leave him for later. But that was exciting when he came out at the end, and they did, is it called a tag team?
The six-man tag.
Yeah, the six-man tag. And, you know, the audience got just so excited. So you can't help but get excited. You know, I'm slowly starting to learn who people are and understand more. So, you know, it's always exciting for me to look and see how the crowd reacts. And there's a lot of energy. So there's a lot to learn, you know. I feel like Andrew is constantly, like, taking me to the side, like, filling me in. And he's like, okay, here's what's going on with this. So I'm learning. But, yeah, I like it. It's exciting. I'm intrigued.
Sidebar, yeah, my first name is Andrew, but everyone calls me by my last name.
Sorry, what?
Okay. Yeah,
and
like,
just to clear anything
like,
up in case there's
boy,
a...
I really butchered that one.
No, yeah, everyone. I'm one of those guys that everyone just calls by his last name. So.
Oh, sorry, yeah, Plotkin.
Okay.
Sorry.
Plotkin, yes. There, that's better. Stephanie, did you...
Sorry, guys.
Did anything kind of, what surprised you most about the show? I mean, you talked about Cody and that being the most exciting part, but was there anything, like, about the night where you were like, man, either in a good or bad way?
Okay, so, yeah, there was a few times, and Andrew, Plotkin, he always tries to take out his phone during these moments, but I am, like, genuinely shocked, like, at some of the news, and that these guys aren't, like, breaking their necks. You know, honestly, I'll be honest, some of the moves to me seem, like, very fake, but some of the moves, I, like, will, like, grab my head, and I'm like, oh, my God, because I'm like, how is that guy not dead, you know? I mean, sometimes, you know, I'm shocked, and there was a couple times tonight where guys were getting thrown on their, like, necks or backs or whatever, and it just stopped me, and I was like, put my hands on my head. Like, I could feel it, you know? Other times, not so much. I mean, this is a irrelevant thing, but I was saying earlier, when we were having dinner with some friends, with all the wrestling I've been watching, the person I've been most impressed with is Logan Paul. Because, oh my God, when he comes out, I'm like, I can't think of myself with him. He stands out. But I know that's irrelevant.
Well, no, I mean that's certainly what they're going for. They want you to react that way. So that's really interesting. Brandon, any questions for Stephanie?
Yeah, I'm just curious. Like, as someone who hasn't been exposed to a bunch of wrestling, and especially in the live setting, I know for people I've been with at shows in the past, they have found the breaks in between with commercial breaks at TV tapings to kind of drag the energy down. And I know WWE has done a lot of different things over the years to try to combat that and keep energy high. So for someone who isn't, like, fully invested in the product and knows everything going on, did you feel like they did a good job in between, like during commercial breaks, or would you like to have seen them do something different?
Oh, that's a really great question. So I've actually brought that up before. I think, well, and tonight, there's really no lull. To me, like, there was never a good time to go to the bathroom or get food because I felt like there was always something going on. So even when there was, you know, break, they were quick, and the energy was always high, in my opinion. Like, I was just high energy the whole time. I really didn't even notice.
It's one of the hottest crowds I've ever seen tonight.
Anything else, Brandon?
No, I think that's pretty much everything. It's always really cool to get a perspective from someone who hasn't been to a bunch of shows and isn't, you know, like, fully tapped in on the weekly product. I always really enjoy it because it gives you a sense of what is working and isn't working and some of the, like, inherent biases that we have as someone who's just watching all the time and covering.
Yeah.
I do
I think it's really
one thing I
want to... go ahead. No, you go.
Just one thing I wanted to add in at the end that made me so incredibly happy was that during the Gunther-Butch match, there was a definitive a small but definitive bruiserweight champ that came out for.
I heard that.
Somebody
that,
who might
that
have
made TV.
Okay, that came across on TV. Okay, good. I was that made me because mm-hmm. when that happened, I was so happy because they do absolutely nothing with Butch except let him look like the, you know, have him be the let me at him, come on. And to know that there are people out there who still, or to know that there are people at main roster shows who are numerous enough to chant that it's heard on television that, you know, this guy used to be something really bad, really good. Sorry, I don't know about the language descriptions on here. It was hearing a bruiserweight chant was really great. I needed to make sure I wanted to mention that.
Very cool. Well, thank you both, Plotkin, Andrew, whatever you go by. Thank you so much. And Stephanie, thank you so much for joining the show too. I hope you guys, sounds like you guys had a really good time. Get home safe and call in again. It's great to hear from you. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. All right. We'll see you. All right.
Very good. Thanks to Andrew and Plotkin and Stephanie for our on-site correspondent. Brandon, I find the comment about Logan Paul is so interesting because
it
really stuck with me because it's like, you know, you wonder sometimes like, okay, man, they're paying this guy a lot of money and, you know, there's all these other people that you can, you know, bring onto the show and they've got a huge roster and, you know, is Logan Paul really doing anything for them? And then you hear from Stephanie who, you know, who's not, you know, an everyday fan and is going to her for shows and that's the guy that sticks out. And that's, you know, that's exactly what they want. And it's fascinating and something that you don't get that kind of feedback all the time when you know, in the bubble.
No, for sure. And it's a fine line too, because Logan Paul is a household name that I think is important to them monetarily and can be a big deal. But there's also the flip side of the coin where Logan Paul is a household name and not necessarily for the right reasons.
So
there are a lot of people that have very, very negative connotations with Logan Paul and some have had them for many, many years. I mean, like my girlfriend is not a wrestling fan by any stretch. I've dragged her to shows before. She's enjoyed herself more or less. She has seen Logan Paul pop up on WWE TV when I'm watching it. And it's an immediate groan for her because like, and she doesn't even like follow, she didn't even follow him on like the stuff he's done in recent years. Her disdain for him comes from back in his early YouTube days and some of the controversy with some of his videos. And I can, for people that know, I can say Japanese Forest and you'll understand what I'm referring to. Just an incredibly distasteful piece of Logan Paul's past that he handled very, very poorly. And I think that it's definitely going to turn some people off the product entirely, but I can't sit here and deny that he does not have legions of people who are interested in what he's doing, be it for because they love him or because they love to hate him. I mean, Prime is a massive sports drink. It's selling out everywhere, or at least was, you know, when it was in scarce supply in the beginning there. It seems to be easy to find now. I don't know what it tastes like. I'm not interested, but it seems to be pretty popular. So Logan Paul's a big name, and we have to talk about him in certain contexts because, you know, you may not like the guy, and I certainly don't really care for the guy, but I also will be the first to admit that he's really freaking good at this, and he is a natural.
and it's resonating with people too, clearly.
Yeah.
So I think that's important. Okay, let's 443. Let's get to you. You've been waiting a long time. I want to appreciate that. 443, you are up. Mm-hmm. State your name and where you're calling from.
It's Kyle from Baltimore. How you doing?
Kyle, what's going on? I thought that was you, my friend. What did you think of SmackDown?
Yeah, it was fine. I think the Majors, I wanted to talk about Foley was about the whole Cody Rhodes stuff, because for me, I'm thinking to myself as watching this is that everyone is kind of expecting or hoping that Cody Rhodes wins at WrestleMania, but my thought is that why? Just because he came back from AEW or came back from injury when he faced Seth Rollins, because it's like, to me, I view Cody Rhodes like, I don't know, it's similar to what they did with, not what they did, but what they're doing now currently now with, on AEW with Saraya and Tony Storm and Ruby Riott. Them three, mainly Paige, was viewed as a credible name. So let's just say that she came back to WWE and faced off in women's division. I'm granted the women's division are so very different because it's not domain women in general. But if she came back and faced Bianca Belair, she'll instantly be champion. I'll be okay with that. But if Cody Rhodes, I don't feel that. I don't feel the same way because for the longest time, this man has been viewed as a mid-carder. And I don't watch AEW, so I don't really care. I don't really know what he did then and don't really care to see what he did because I don't really care about it. So to me, just watching Cody tonight and throughout this entire feud, there is no feud. That's the other problem with this match. There's no feud between Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. And so I'm expecting him to lose at WrestleMania and tell an actual story between the two that he'll win in a different pay-per-view. So what do you think about that, this whole thing that people are saying, oh, he has to win at WrestleMania because for some apparent reason he said he needs to be the champion at WrestleMania. Why can't he be champion at a different time beyond WrestleMania, besides WrestleMania?
I think he could be champion at a different time. I mean, I think that that's certainly on the table, and I wouldn't say that Cody's
to give the story more longer, you know, as well. That's the other thing.
Well, I mean, I think Kyle, like, it's more comes down to like when I look at it is. Sometimes, especially in wrestling, like sometimes, you know, the context around the moment helps make the moment what it is. And so if you're going to put Cody over and you're going to like, not only are you going to crown Cody Rhodes the champion, but you're also going to dethrone Roman Reigns, which is also a huge deal. It's an equally huge deal for Roman to lose the title as it is for Cody to win it. And I think you want the context around that, like both of those significant events to be at the biggest show of the year. So I think that I start there with it. And then I would just disagree with you a little bit in terms of there is no feud. I think there is a feud. I mean, this is it's a Royal Rumble win. That's how he got this opportunity. He's planted the flag in the, I'm doing this for my family and I'm doing it for the fans and I'm doing it for me.
That's the problem though for me is that he always says he wants to do it for his father, not for himself. That's the other big problem that I have. Everything about this entire thing for me, and also to just the way he won the Rumble, the way he and wanted to be the champion for his father, not really for himself. And then getting involved in Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens' business. It feels like everything has been like, he's been getting involved. It's like, I don't know. To me, it just feels like I feel like he's getting involved where he doesn't belong, and it feels like that he's doing it for his family and not for himself. And then I just feel like it's another Bianca Belair situation where he becomes champion and then what type of feeling? That's the feeling I've been getting from this entire Cody Rhodes journey so far. When he came back, that's the feeling I get, that he's very similar to how Bianca Belair felt. Like people were clamoring and hoping for Bianca to be the champion that last year, and we all see how it transpired after her feud with Becky was over with. Granted, it's different in the men's division. There's more opponents in the men's division than there is in the women's, so there is that factor, but I just feel like it's very similar to that degree. I don't know. That's how I feel about it. They may prove me wrong,
no,
but that's
similar,
how I
come
across to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's similar in that regardless of what happens, you know, Cody, I mean, just like Bianca, you have to have good opponents for the champion after the fact, and Cody's no different. But, I mean, I think that the story about winning for your family, and Brandon, I'll talk to you, like, right after this, but to me, like, yeah, it's some of it is rooted in his family, but that is for him. It is his it's his family, and he want, you know, so it's still, I don't differentiate, oh, well, because he says he wants to win for his family, it means he doesn't want to win for himself. I mean, I think that's kind of inherent in that first kind of declaration. Brandon, break the tie here.
I think they've done a pretty good job with Cody treading the line between his honoring Dusty's legacy and building his own, in that Cody wants to be his own man. He also wants to, you know, to accomplish things that his father couldn't and other members of his family couldn't. He wants to be the first one to main event a WrestleMania and to win a championship, a world championship at WrestleMania. He also wants to prove to you know, nameless, faceless doubters that Roman Reigns is wrong when he says that, you know, he's the son that Dusty wishes he had. I mean, he wants to prove that he can best the person who Dusty thought was going to be the best. There's a lot of familial drama and also coming of age in the story that they're telling. I also think that beyond that, there is just the traditional rivalry that they've built up in that, you know, the winner of the Royal Rumble goes on to face the world champion at WrestleMania in the main event. And that match kind of sells itself. And of course, you build in personal animosity along the way, which they've done. And I think they've done effectively. I also think that Cody Rhodes has gotten involved in the Bloodline story as a whole, as a beacon of morality. He has used his position to lead Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn back to each other in their quest for the tag team titles. And those stories, I think, are very much intertwined, which I spoke about
earlier.
Why does
he care, though? I just don't know why he cares about that, though. I don't know.
Well, because he's determined like Sammy and KO have determined that they're going to take down the Bloodline, and he sees this as an opportunity, like I was kind of mentioning earlier. If he can sow seeds of doubt within the Bloodline, then he creates a vulnerability in Roman Reigns that hasn't been there before. If Cody can make Solo Sikoa vulnerable to, you know, prone to aggression and anger by telling him that he's not ready, and if he can reunite KO and Sami Zayn against a common enemy while also making Jey Uso question if he wants to remain in the Bloodline, which by extension then causes Jimmy Uso to doubt whether his brother is in it for the long haul, that again makes Roman Reigns more vulnerable for Cody. So all roads kind of lead back to Cody Rhodes and his quest to win the championship from Roman Reigns. I also think that in terms of getting Cody ready for this moment, I certainly was not necessarily of the belief from the get-go that you could bring Cody Rhodes into WWE fresh off of an AEW run that ended with much more of a thud than it did an explosion. I mean, Cody gets a lot of credit for being one of the founding pillars of AEW, and he was a really hot act in the beginning days of that company. But toward the end there, he was not a hot commodity at all, and he was someone who the fans were you know, aggressively turning against. And Cody, I think, made some poor business decisions in the way that he handled his final months there, being unwilling to turn heel, and maybe he sensed the writing was on the wall and he was out the door. But the last few months of Cody's time there were not great ones for him. And that's, you know, some of his own stubbornness, some of the way that company was run and just the way things were going at the time. So when Cody came into WWE, I didn't sense that he was necessarily a hot commodity himself. I sensed that the interest and the excitement surrounding his arrival was more just the fact that WWE stole an EVP from AEW. I think that was the bigger story rather than it being Cody Rhodes himself, because Cody was a WWE guy. He started as a WWE guy, and it seemed like he had shed that skin being an EVP and creating a rival promotion. But I just don't think he was in a position character-wise at the time to come in as this heir apparent to the world title. So he needed to work for that. And I think that the three-month feud with Seth Rollins did a ton in the eyes of WWE fans, and the Hell in a Cell match in particular.
Right.
I well, think actually, let me right not there fast the... here because actually, well, I was going to talk about that as well, because the other problem that I have with Cody is that he has been injured. He has been gone. I imagine this before. All that time away, they've been telling the story with Cody, with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens for months before when he was already was gone.
Yeah.
So then, and then for him to come back in the way he came back to the Rumble, came back to number 30, everyone knew he was coming back anyway, and had Gunther there from number one, and all we lasted, and Cody Rhodes only had a few people to eliminate. The way he won the Rumble was really, really weird. And from that point on until now, that's why I just can't buy him even more as a champion, because champion, beyond the fact of the way he came back, the fact that he did get injured, and everything that revolves around everything that has happened to him throughout last year till now makes me just beyond the fact of me not care for him, just as that stuff that happened to him in the summer made me like, okay, well, why should he even win the title? I'm expecting him to lose at WrestleMania because there's no credible story with Roman and Cody.
Sure.
But there's no really personal story that they have with them two particularly. It's all people are saying that have Cody come in and win the championship because he came back from AEW. That's what it feels like to me, that people are wanting this to happen. Beyond, I need this. If he's going to be the guy, fine, but let there be an actual story between Cody and Roman beyond, you know, everything like that. So that's why I just can't. I would have accepted it. I still wouldn't like it, but I would have accepted it if he never got it injured. We'll never know what happened. And just the way he won the Rumble in general. So I think that's my problem, really, it, really, is that situation. So,
it'll be interesting to see. We'll have to chat, you know, post WrestleMania. But Kyle, I gotta let you go because I gotta hit some emails here that I got.
Yeah.
We're going long, so I gotta turn this turn the.
Actually, one last thing.
Turn the
one
show
quick,
on.
But... See, real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
One last thing, real quick. That with the women, right? I still expect Rhea to win. Now this entire feud, hopefully after WrestleMania, when Rhea wins, hopefully it will make the SmackDown Women's Division more interesting by bringing up more women from NXT, but we'll see if that happens. That's it. So I wanted to say about that.
We'll see. Yeah. We won't have to wait too long. Thanks so much, Kyle. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend, and thank you for the call, as always, man.
Zach, one thing the counterpoint that I was getting to there with the AEW argument that Kyle was making was just that, coming out of Hell in a Cell and the performance that Cody had leading up to the return and everything they've done since, to me, it feels like they've entirely shedded that AEW skin. I mean, Cody feels like a WWE guy through and through. And not only that, it feels to me like you have to go with what you see from crowds on a week-to-week basis. And I mean, we all analyze here, myself included, whether or not Cody could really get over in this position with Sami Zayn being as popular as he has. And the fact that he not only did, but is now excelling on a week-to-week basis, and crowds didn't hijack shows in favor of Sami Zayn because they had Cody Rhodes waiting in the wings, tells me that they have fully assimilated him into WWE culture. The fans have fully assimilated and accepted him as a WWE superstar, not an AEW transplant, and that everything they've done was the right call.
Yes, I think that's a really good point. Because, yeah, it was never a given that he was going to get reactions like he got tonight on SmackDown. Like, it never was a given. In fact, like, I think there was a lot of doubt around, okay, like how is he gonna integrate back in? And I mean, yeah, I was in the building for the Hell in a Cell match, and that, I mean, I think that absolutely turned the tide quite a bit, actually, in terms of him just fully being back in WWE in a big way, because that was a heck of a match, a heck of a moment. You just don't get that all the time. And he hit a home run there.
And it's organic. I mean, you can't fake it. And
right.
the other thing too is just the fact that, like, yes, you can make the argument that when Cody came in last year at WrestleMania, the loose plan was for him to challenge the following year at WrestleMania, and I think that's likely true. But we've seen that kind of thing fall apart in the past. I mean, who's to say that come Royal Rumble time, Cody Rhodes wasn't in a position of being 2014 Batista, where people were just adamant that, like, this isn't our guy. It could have gone that way.
Yep, absolutely. And that's why, like, you do have to look at the crowd reactions. And I think, you know, Kyle and other people are going to have their own opinions on, hey, okay, we like this guy, we don't, or I don't watch AEW, I don't know who he is, I can't buy it. You're going to have that. But when you do look at the crowd reaction on a week-to-week basis since the Royal Rumble until now, I mean, Cody's regularly in top three pops. I mean, if you listen to this show regularly, when we do have on-site correspondence, I mean, he's 1, 2, or 3 all the time. Yeah. And, you know, even tonight, like, you take out look, Ray had a big moment tonight, so obviously that's going to be the pop of the night. But, you know, Cody's still hovering around the top, and that stuff matters. You know, this isn't like WWE pushing Cody Rhodes down the throats of fans a la Roman Reigns in 2016. It's just not the same.
Yeah, and I would very much argue that you don't have to have a good read on anything Cody Rhodes did on the indies or in AEW to buy into his story as a main event act in WWE. In other words, I think they have done a good enough job with what they've presented on television that you can have never seen Cody Rhodes wrestle in AEW and have no idea what he was doing for 6 years while he was away from WWE and still feel like he's a viable main eventer.
Yeah, fair. Absolutely. Okay, let's wrap up with one quick email here, because we have been running long. So this is from Matt, and Matt writes, what do you make of the Cena match going on first? Why do you think they announced that so early? Is it possible Theory loses to Cena and then wins back his title on Raw, and Cena gives him the endorsement then? So, yes, we did get this announcement. They officially revealed John Cena versus Austin Theory is going on first on Saturday night at WrestleMania, kicking off the show. Brandon, I'll throw to you first. What do you think on that? Why?
Yeah, it's a little bit curious, only because they haven't started announcing the division in matches yet, which, to my knowledge, since we've been having these two-night WrestleManias, they've started doing that before now. Like, they've started telling us definitively what matches are on what night. And I know that they have made late-stage changes to try to balance the cards out a little bit more. But by now, I thought we had a pretty good read on who was working what night. So outside of, you know, assuming that they'll split up the women's title matches, assuming they'll split up the world title and the tag team titles, because we view those, you know, as potential co-main events, the only thing we know for certain is, you know, Cody and Roman on night two, and Austin and Cena on night one. I don't know. I wonder if there's a storyline purpose for it, or this is just like the Brock Lesnar gimmick. Like, let's get Cena in there and get him out because he's got other commitments. I mean, it really could be as simple as, like, Cena's got to shoot something. We got to get him out.
That's where my head went right away too. And I think, you know, you're seeing, like, okay, well, WWE's just kind of try to, you know, continue to dominate, like, the news cycle over the weekend and the week by trickling out when these matches are going to happen. And they just know Cena's going on first because he's got to get out of there. That's how I took it. I don't know, Matt, that there's any kind of deeper story other than, Cena's got to be on a plane by, you know, by nine Eastern or something like that. And so he's got to get out of there.
It's also a really good spot. I mean, for Cena,
it's a testament to
Cena. I mean, you're on first, you have the hottest crowd. I mean, they're ready to go. It's the first match of WrestleMania weekend. It's a great spot for him. It's a great spot for Theory. I mean, I just think, you know, even if Cena doesn't have any other commitments, if they called John and said, hey, where do you want to wrestle? You're not going to be the main event. Then why wouldn't he say, put me on first on Saturday?
Right. Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely. It makes total sense. But yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see, but I don't think, Matt, that this is indicative of any kind of further story. I think this is just them breaking news and Cena's going on first. Brandon, we'll wrap up there, man.
Before we totally wrap up, I just wanted to mention real quick and get your thought here, where they're doing these tag team showcases, but then they also tonight on the show announced that they're still doing the Andre the Giant Battle Royal on SmackDown. And did you happen to catch some of the names that are in that match?
No, I don't even think – I think I missed that announcement entirely.
Okay. So they announced WrestleMania SmackDown for next Friday.
Right.
And some of the stuff you would have expected, stuff they talked about during the show. And then they also confirmed that they are bringing back the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. And front and center on the list of competitors was Bobby Lashley.
No kidding. Okay, I'm going to have to definitely go back and watch that because
yeah.
I was fast-forwarding through commercials and I may have just fast-forwarded too much.
Yeah, they didn't talk names specifically. They just threw up a graphic and it had just a flurry of wrestlers on the graphic. Essentially, every male wrestler who is not currently in a WrestleMania match, including LA Knight, by the way, was on the graphic. And Bobby Lashley was front and center with LA Knight and Baron Corbin.
Wow. I mean, it's surprising for just because, I mean, Lashley has been such a focal point of stuff in the last,
yeah.
you know, from last WrestleMania until now that he doesn't have something more significant. And I know things went haywire, but.
Sure. I was just thinking like, why not, you know, I thought that maybe they were holding on to LA Knight for Steve Austin. I was kind of thinking if Austin's going to make an appearance, not wrestle a match, but just make an appearance, it would make a whole lot of sense for him to just come out there and stun LA Knight. Like that's a cool little WrestleMania moment.
Yeah.
It gets LA Knight on the show. It gives Austin something to do. Crowd pops big. That works. But then I also got to thinking like, man, you could just set up a quick program with Lashley and LA Knight and get them both on the show in a singles match. But it appears that they're both in the battle royal.
Yeah. Well, and I know that that is very interesting because I know that some of the reporting done is kind of indicating that they were going to still try to go ahead and do the Bray Wyatt thing. But I mean, look at this point, I don't think you can. I mean, there's just not enough time. So that's interesting. And Lashley, hopefully you're getting paid the same.
It's just odd to me that they're opting to put that on SmackDown and yet giving a main show slot to these tag team matches that just make no sense. Like at least with the Battle Royals, you're getting a whole bunch of people onto the card and you have a singles trophy that you can put to someone that you believe in. And if the push for them works out, great. And if it doesn't, well, they put the trophy on people that haven't worked out in the past, so no big deal. But at least you're getting them on the show for something that has some tradition and some heritage with the WrestleMania brand versus these just completely random tag team matches that aren't even for contendership. They're just tag team matches.
Yes, they're showcase matches in the truest sense. Yeah. No, I always thought the Andre the Giant Battle Royal match gimmick was kind of a good one to have on WrestleMania.
Yeah,
because you do want to get people on the show. I mean, there's a business end to that, and, you know, they're a company. They want their people to be happy, and that's important. And it's a good way to, like, make that happen and have the show not be 6 hours long like it used to be a handful of not that long ago. So, you know, it was what it was, and it's treated that way. It wasn't treated as like a bigger deal than it should have been. It was like, I thought it slotted nicely. And so, yeah, this is that's an interesting move for sure. To good catch, because I must have just breezed like right on through that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the thing right now, so I can tell you real quick rundown here. Bobby Lashley, and it's actually Karrion Kross, not Baron Corbin out front that I saw, but Baron Corbin is in the match. So Bobby Lashley, Karrion Kross, Baron Corbin, Bronson Reed, you've got LA Knight, you've got Xavier Woods, the Brawling Brutes are in there, Johnny Gargano and Dexter Lumis, you've got the entirety of Legado del Fantasma, you've got Gallows and Anderson, you have got Shelton and Cedric, and the entirety of Hit Row, as well as Mustafa Ali, Dolph Ziggler, and it looks like Elias and Rick Boogs. So, yeah, I mean, really, the entire remaining men's roster is in the match.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess if you're going to do it, like, that's the way to do it.
Man, it's just, you know, you're looking at Lashley and LA Knight and Karrion Kross and Bronson Reed, all guys that, you know, were, you know, Lashley's been high up on the card for a while, but Cross and LA Knight and Reed were all rehires by Triple H or call ups by Triple H that just not panned out.
Yeah, yep.
Reed's a different story, but LA Knight is a different story, but still.
Yeah, Reed's a little too new to kind of. Yeah. You know, I don't think he had time to get anything developed, but.
No.
But yeah, all right, man. We'll wrap it up there. Brandon, how can people follow you on social media and talk a little bit about your work for pwtorch.com and what you're going to be doing next weekend?
Yeah, sure. So you can follow me at BLeClaire12 on Twitter. I talk wrestling and some music and movies whenever I get the chance, and I love engaging with other Torch contributors and readers and listeners. It's a lot of fun, and I'm really really glad and happy to be part of this community, especially this time of year, when things are so fun and crazy. And you can catch my work on the Torch coming right up here next week. I will be on typing duty, live coverage duty for both nights of WrestleMania, Saturday and Sunday. So you can follow along with my real-time coverage and analysis, which sometimes I get to squeeze in during the show itself, but the last couple of shows I've made a habit of going back and doing the analysis after, just because I feel like I have a lot more time to kind of digest my thoughts and put together coherent sentences. So I have been saving that for the end. I also, in addition to frequently co-hosting here on the Torch post shows, I also do alt perspective coverage for AEW pay-per-views as well. So I will be again at the desk for Double or Nothing in May.
Very good. I'm PW Torch's assistant editor, Zach Haydorn. You can follow my work at pwtorch.com, especially next week. We'll have you covered all week long, obviously on Raw and on SmackDown leading up to WrestleMania, but also all the WrestleMania week stuff. So coverage of GCW's The Collective and Ring of Honor and the Impact of New Japan show and everything else that's going to be going on in Los Angeles. Keep it locked to pwtorch.com. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to PW Torch on YouTube. We've got a host of exclusive content each and every single day, a lot of it live that goes up on the channel on a regular basis. So head over there, search PW Torch on YouTube, and subscribe. Next week, me and Tyler Sage will be doing some past WrestleMania match watch-alongs, like some of our favorite WrestleMania matches and also some of our least favorite WrestleMania matches. So we'll have some fun with that, as well as our regular slate of content and programming throughout the week. So PW Torch on YouTube. And as I mentioned at the start of the show, I had a book come out this past week. It's up for pre-order. It's called Stunning, The Wrestling Artistry of Steve Austin, and is a book dedicated to analyzing the artistry of Steve Austin's career, front to back. So we start in 1990, and we end with a stunner at WrestleMania 38 on Kevin Owens, and really kind of dive into his career and into his matches specifically, and in a deep way throughout the entire book and throughout all the different eras. So search for the link on my Twitter page at ZHeyDornTorch. You can pre-order the book. It's up for 22 more days as a pre-order, and you can get it discounted then, both an ebook and or a paperback copy, but both discounted if you pre-order right now. So I think you'll enjoy it. I certainly enjoyed writing it, and hopefully you guys can check it out. I'd appreciate it. You can follow us, our brand, on Twitter at PW Torch. As I said, you can follow me on Twitter at ZHeyDornTorch. Brandon, one more time with your social media.
Yeah, at BLeClaire12 on Twitter if you'd like to follow me and see what I have to say about various things.
There we go. Fantastic. Thank you to our callers. Thank you to our emailers. Wade will be on the VIP side of things later running down the show on the Wade Keller Hotline, as I mentioned, pwtorch.com/goVIP to check that out. Now is the time. Everybody, thank you very much, and we will catch you all next time.